Welcome to another Fanhouse MMA podcast. I am joined, as always, by my friend Ariel Helwani. Ariel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, MDS. Great to be here, as always.
And, you know, every Monday we've been talking about MMA, and we're going to do plenty of that. But why don't we get started by talking just a little bit about boxing? I think that although MMA and boxing have somewhat separate fan bases, this is probably a big enough fight that I think we can safely assume that our MMA fans are at least somewhat interested in talking about this fight as well. It was one of the fights of the year in any combat sport in terms of the build-up to it. But Ariel, when you look back at how those two rounds of fury turned out, what are your thoughts on that Pacquiao-Hatton fight?
Well, obviously, Manny Pacquiao, pretty much solidified his spot as the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world. A lot of people question whether or not Ricky Hatton is, as you know, Fanhouse's Kevin Blackstone mentioned, just simply a club fighter, or whether he can hang with the best in the world in boxing. He clearly didn't show that he could against Floyd Mayweather, and he definitely showed that he couldn't against Manny Pacquiao on Saturday. I thought that the most interesting thing, looking at this from perhaps a MMA perspective, was that I am a huge fan of knockouts and quick finishes and all that when ordering a pay-per-view. And when that happens in a UFC pay-per-view or on a Strikeforce main event or whatever, I'm usually not disappointed. In fact, I'm actually a lot happier than when I see a fight going the distance. I feel like it's exciting, and especially when it's, you know, in very convincing fashion, that's always exciting as a fan. Yet in boxing, which brings us back to the big problem with boxing, you see this issue where the main event, it's been built up for the last month or so on 24/7 and all that. It lasts, you know, 6 minutes in total, two rounds. And yet I felt like I didn't really get my money's worth. Why? Because the undercard wasn't that exciting. And yes, the Soto-Godet fight was okay, but we didn't really care about these guys. We didn't know much about them. There was, you know, in terms of like their rivalry, or and there was no hype. There wasn't even a pre-fight package on the two fighters. So, you know, a Liddell Jackson fight at UFC 71 could end very quickly, but the undercard is great, and you feel like, wow, I just got myself a great night of fighting. So to me, that was, you know, it's been a long time since we've seen a big boxing fight end so quickly. And it just kind of, you know, struck me at how different both sports are being presented in terms of how they are on pay-per-view.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. You know, I talked to Ricky Hatton when he did his chat with Fanhouse readers last week. And one of the things he mentioned is, boxing could learn a lot from the UFC simply by seeing how the UFC markets its fights. And a big part of that is the undercard. The UFC doesn't just tell you you're buying one fight. I mean, yes, obviously the main event is always the one that's going to get the most publicity, but the UFC, you never feel like you're buying a UFC card. And then I really don't care about any of these undercard fights. I only care about the main event. With boxing, you do feel that way, and so, like you said, when a fight ends quickly, you're impressed, and certainly everyone was impressed with Manny Pacquiao, but you're also thinking to yourself, is it worth $50 to watch 6 minutes of boxing, which is what Pacquiao and Hatton gave us on Saturday night, and that's a problem, and that's why, as we've said before, boxing needs to do a better job of building up these undercard fights, make them feel like the atmosphere in the arena is exciting. You know, when we were watching, you and I were both watching on TV while we were doing our live chat, and just watching the crowd during those undercard fights, you've got people talking on the phone, you've got people turning around and talking to the person behind them, you know, right there on camera, people in front row seats turning around with their back to the ring while the fights are going on, and it sets up the wrong atmosphere, and it's a shame, and it's something that I really hope boxing works to address. It doesn't mean that they have to make main event quality fights an undercard fight. It's not that. It's just that they need to tell us, why should we care about someone like Humberto Soto? Why is he worthy of our time when we've put in the money in his pay-per-view? And because he's a good fighter, he's one of the best boxers in the world, really, but he's not someone that many fans know anything about.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem because, as you mentioned, there were some actually interesting names on the undercard. Soto, Daniel Jacobs. I mean, there were some up-and-coming guys if you actually pay attention to that stuff. And the announcers, Jim Lampley, Manuel Stewart, Larry Merchant, they did a pretty good job while the fight is happening of telling us about these guys, why they're up-and-comers, et cetera, et cetera. But if anyone has been to a friend's apartment to watch a boxing pay-per-view with, you know, five or six guys, they all know that there's a lot of talk. People are not really paying attention while the undercard is on. And then everyone is, you know, fixed on the television when the main event happens. So no one's even really listening to what the announcers are talking about. So they need to, you know, get some pre-fight packages, some build-up. Show us who these guys are. I know they're not going to feature them on a 24/7 like show, but figure out something. Put out you know, little web videos like the UFC does. Get people to start embedding these things. Get people into who these up and coming guys, because you know, one day the Pacquiao's, the Hattons, you know, now we see De La Hoya gone, the Mayweathers, they're all going to be gone. And it's a problem. You know, it's something that a lot of boxing analysts have said. They're not putting enough time and effort into building up the young stars for whatever reason. Boxing has just turned its back on those people. And we see young fighters like Andre Ward, who's, you know, fighting in a couple of weeks, pretty much get, you know, ignored by the casual fans. So they need to do a better job of doing that. And it just really struck me. But nothing, you know, obviously not taking anything away from the actual fight and what Manny Pacquiao was able to accomplish on Saturday night. And obviously, as a fan, I'm hoping that Floyd Mayweather gets by Juan Manuel Marquez, and then we can eventually see the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, super fight, real super fight down the road, hopefully at the end of 2008 or 2009. I saw Dan Rayfield of ESPN.com on SportsCenter last night, and he said that, you know, the three main contenders are obviously Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, and surprisingly, I think, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Cotto's obviously fighting on June 13th against Joshua Clady. That I would definitely pay to watch that fight, but to me, it's the fight that needs to happen, and it's the reason why Floyd Mayweather came back. That's Pacquiao versus Mayweather sometime later this year or early next year.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Pacquiao versus Mayweather is the fight in boxing. It's very rare that you have two fighters who are as accomplished as those two, who are close enough in weight at the top of their game, who can fight each other. It would be an absolutely huge fight. Wouldn't be maybe the pay-per-view draw that, say, Mayweather versus De La Hoya was, but in terms of the caliber of the boxing on display, it'd be an even bigger fight. And it would be a fight that boxing desperately needs. I really do hope, like you said, that Mayweather beats Marquez, and that he beats, that he then is in a position where he's ready to fight Pacquiao, and that Pacquiao is ready to fight him, and the two of them going at it would be a great fight. I thought heading into Saturday night, I think I even mentioned to you Saturday afternoon that I thought Mayweather would beat Pacquiao. I don't think that anymore. After watching Pacquiao beat Ricky Hatton, also watching, it's interesting, these two guys, Pacquiao and Mayweather, have the same two last opponents, Hatton and Oscar De La Hoya, and in both cases, Pacquiao looked much more impressive against them, and because of that, I really do believe that Pacquiao will beat Mayweather if that fight happens. Who are you picking if that fight happens?
I still have to give credit to Floyd Mayweather. I know he's been gone since December 2007, but I'm so impressed with him. And until, you know, we see him fight Juan Manuel Marquez and we see any signs of his talent deteriorating due to the layoff or due to, you know, age, whatever, I still have to give him the nod. When he retired, he was the pound-for-pound king. And in my opinion, now that he's back, he is still the pound-for-pound king. Manny Pacquiao is 1A, 1B. But I still think that that title needs to be taken away from Floyd Mayweather, the same way I think the title needs to be taken away from Fedor Emelianenko. Obviously, the guys behind him in MMA aren't going to be challenging him anytime soon, George St. Pierre, Anderson Silva. But these two guys are you know, in and around the same weight class, and Mayweather was just so dominant and undefeated before he retired. I still got to give him the nod up until we see him looking a little weak or a little human against either Marquez or someone after that.
Yeah, I think we both reserve the right to change our minds after we see Mayweather against Marquez. That'll tell us plenty, and that's a great fight. I mean, no one should think that Mayweather is taking a tune-up against a weak opponent or something. I mean, Marquez, maybe casual sports fans might not be real knowledgeable about who Marquez is, but he's a tremendous fighter. Gave Pacquiao all he could handle. They fought to a draw once, and Pacquiao beat him by split decision the second time. So Marquez is a very good opponent. But I want to back up a second. You said Fedor Emelianenko. He is your number one pound for pound in MMA, is he not?
Yes, of course. Did I not say
that? Okay, so he's both of us. Both of us have Fedor number one pound for pound in MMA. I guess we disagree about who's number one pound for pound in boxing because I say Pacquiao, right?
Yeah. I definitely, 100% Fedor is number one. I was just saying that it's going to be hard for someone in the pound for pound because there are no other heavyweights in the top five to take that title away from Fedor single-handedly. Fedor will have to sort of lose and drop that title on his own. But in boxing, we have a case where the top two fighters in the world are also in the same weight class, and they can kind of duke it out themselves. That was the distinction that I was trying to make, but did a poor job in doing
it. Gotcha. And the other thing that I would just say that is so impressive about Pacquiao is we're saying he and Mayweather are approximately the same weight class. Of course, the truth is that that's only because Pacquiao keeps moving up to challenge himself against bigger opponents, both in physical stature and in the name value. Pacquiao, of course, naturally is a smaller man than Mayweather, although as he has continued building himself up, he has a very sculpted physique for fighting in the 140-pound range. But he is, of course, naturally a smaller man. I mean, if he had big money and big challenges at a smaller weight class, he'd probably still be fighting in closer to the 125 to 130 range. So that's something that I think we have to give Pacquiao a lot of credit for as well. But I actually wanted to go back to something else that we were saying earlier and transition a little bit to MMA, and that is this concept of undercards being boring in boxing and exciting in the UFC and also exciting in other MMA organizations, I think. And I don't think there's a better example of that coming up than UFC 98, where we know the main event is the light heavyweight title fight between Rashad Evans and Lyoto Machida. And yet, time and time again, I hear from UFC fans who are just extremely excited about finally seeing Matt Hughes and Matt Serra fight each other. And I think the fact that Matt Hughes versus Matt Serra is not a main event is part of what has the UFC so successful, and that is that people feel like I'm paying for a lot of fights I want to see and not just one fight I want to see.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, just look at UFC 97, the Chuck Liddell fight. Chuck Liddell, if he was a boxer, would never be put on an undercard, just given all that he accomplished. He held the UFC light heavyweight title just a couple of years ago. That would never happen. Just look at Antonio Tarver. I'm not saying Tarver is the equivalent of Chuck Liddell in boxing. He definitely is not, but he's headlining a card this week. And you can make a case that he's no longer a headlining fighter. So Liddell was on the undercard, and a lot more people cared about that fight, I think, than the fight that had the pound-for-pound, arguably the pound-for-pound king in the main event, Anderson Silva, going up against Talis Laitis. So it's just amazing that the UFC has so many great fighters in their stable. And like you said, the Hughes-Serra fight is getting a lot more exposure and coverage than Evans-Machida, just because of the fact that they're great trash talkers, they have a long-standing feud, all that stuff. And there's other great fights. I mean, like, even fights that aren't televised get a lot of coverage. That's how amazing the UFC, that's a great job that the UFC has done in terms of building up their talent from, the 10th card, the 10th fight to the first fight on the card. Houston Alexander, who unfortunately now had to pull out of his fight against Andre Guzmão due to a broken hand. This is a guy that, a year and a half ago, I was sitting at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, when he was about to face Thiago Silva, and he received the loudest ovation of the night. He wasn't even fighting in the main event, but just because he had a couple of very impressive knockout victories, the fans loved him. Now he's on a big losing streak. People were very excited to see how he would respond. He's out. It's just one of those things. Yushin Okami, a lot of people excited to see him fight because of the fact that He was, ranked number two on many lists in terms of the middleweight division. Unfortunately, he's had to pull out, but still a good card. The point being that there are all these great fighters who are not even fighting on the pay-per-view that people want to see. And in boxing, it's hard to even find, the second fight from the top to get people to be interested in that one. So it's a very different time right now. The UFC just continues to put out great main events, but also great cards top to bottom. We never really see a boring card or a lackluster card. And even when it's a card like UFC 95 that a lot of people weren't into, it ends up being one of the most exciting cards of the year, just because so many great fighters and the nature of MMA where anything can happen in a flash.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that the UFC isn't selling you a specific fighter or a specific fight as much as it is simply selling you a UFC show. And you get into this thing where obviously fans have their favorite fighters and the fights they really want to see. But in general, when you're buying a UFC show, you're really just buying the idea that, well, with the UFC, I think they're going to deliver. I think I'm going to see something exciting. And you mentioned several guys who have been pulled from this upcoming UFC 98 card. You didn't even mention the main event was originally supposed to be Frank Mir versus Brock Lesnar. That got scrapped because Frank Mir got hurt. Then after that, we thought the main event was going to be Rampage Jackson against Rashad Evans. Rampage Jackson said he wouldn't be ready. Now it's Lyoto Machida against Rashad Evans. I think certainly the majority of the fans who bought tickets would have preferred Mir versus Lesnar or Rampage instead of Machida challenging Rashad. But I haven't heard too many UFC fans say, boy, I'm really disappointed in UFC 98, because the UFC has reached the point where they have so many guys that they've marketed to their fans that when someone falls out with an injury, they can put someone new in there and you still feel like you're going to get a pretty good show. And that's what I think UFC 98 is going to be. I interviewed both Matt Hughes and Matt Serra recently. The two of them are selling their fight. And I don't think they're playing it up. I think they do genuinely dislike each other. And the two of them just cannot wait to fight each other. And I think the fans can't wait to see that. Rashad Evans against Lyoto Machida, those two have not historically been huge draws for the UFC, but I don't think anyone can dispute that this is a matchup between, two top 10 pound-for-pound fighters in the world. I mean, that's a really good fight. And you've got other fights. I know you interviewed Sean Sherk, who's going to have a tough challenge, I think, against Frank Edgar. I think if Sherk wins that, he can say that he should be close to getting a lightweight title shot. You go down the line, and it's like for every, even though they lose so many guys, they lost Josh Koscheck, but I still like the welterweight fight they have between Brock Larson and Chris Wilson, and that's not even going to be on the pay-per-view broadcast. So, it just shows what kind of depth and talent the UFC has that even something like UFC 98, as star-crossed a fight card as it has been, it still has some pretty good fights on it. And I don't think when it's all said and done, we're going to be hearing too many fans complaining about what they're getting with UFC 98.
Yeah, and another interesting thing, and I'm not trying to rip on boxing this whole entire podcast, but usually when a main event gets scrapped due to an injury, the whole card gets scrapped. Here the UFC is able to plug someone in. Obviously, tickets were sold and all that, but they're able to plug someone in, and the fans are upset for a minute, but then they're like, oh, wow, this is another great main event. It happens time after time. We saw it happen in London last year, UFC 85. Chuck gets injured, Rashad gets injured. It was a very similar card where a lot of guys were getting injured. They plug in an intriguing matchup between Matt Hughes and Thiago Alves, and it turns out to be a pretty solid card. So I totally agree with you. And also a guy that you didn't mention, which I'm excited to see, Philippe Nover, who trains in Brooklyn here in New York. This was the guy that everyone thought was going to win the Ultimate Fighter last season. Dana White was calling him the next GSP. He doesn't end up winning. He loses to Efrain Escudero, but now he's back, and it would be interesting to see how he rebounds and if he does, in fact, live up to all the hype. So definitely a lot of interesting fights on that card. And once again, kudos to the UFC for, it just seems like the last year or so, every single fight card, whether or not it's sexy on paper, just continues to deliver. So I'm obviously very excited about this one as well.
Yeah, and we still got a couple weeks to go, and we'll have a more complete UFC 98 preview at some point. But it really does show that difference. You know, you just mentioned Philippe Nover. He's a guy I'd like to see. As of the last I heard, they're not planning on putting that on the pay-per-view card either. And again, you know, with boxing, you don't get that. You don't get fights that you wish you could see that aren't even on the pay-per-view card. Boxing, you get the exact opposite, fights you don't care about that are on the pay-per-view card. So really big. It's really quite amazing how many fighters the UFC currently has that the fans care about. And that's something that you and I will be talking about a lot in the next couple of weeks. But I also want to talk a little bit about a fight that's coming up sooner than that. And that's the Strikeforce Challenger Series fight that's coming up in a couple of weeks in May. It's actually the weekend before UFC 98. And that had a little bit of an odd change. Kim Couture, whose name is obviously known mostly because she shares a last name with Randy Couture, she was supposed to be fighting. You had a post up this morning talking about how she's out and now they have a replacement. Just give people a little bit of rundown of what's going on with that fight.
All right. Well, last week, Kim Couture pulled out of her fight against Maisha Tate, May 15th, Strikeforce Challenger Series in Fresno, California, due to personal reasons. That was the reason that Strikeforce official gave to me. And now we see that Sarah Kaufman, who's obviously not as big of a name as Kim Couture, comes in, replaces her against Tate, and now all of a sudden Tate was, you know, an overwhelmingly large favorite going into the fight against Couture. Now we see Kaufman come in 8-0, last fought April 23rd, and now Tate is the underdog. So it's interesting. She, you know, obviously not as high profile. Anytime Couture fights, it's kind of high profile just because of her last name. But for hardcore MMA fans, and especially hardcore female MMA fans, this fight makes a lot more sense and is a lot more legitimate in their eyes. Both fighters are very good. Kaufman, none of her fights have ever gone the distance. All 8 of her victories have been TKO victories, and she has an intriguing story. She used to be a ballet dancer and then transitioned into the world of mixed martial arts. And Tate is a fan favorite online because she is good looking, and it's unfortunate that, you know, female MMA stars get noticed due to their looks, but that's kind of the nature of the beast with all female sports. And, you know, we have to mention the fact that it now appears to be the reason why Kim Couture was pulled out of that fight is because apparently and reportedly Randy Couture and her are getting a divorce, and obviously that's a really tough situation, and it obviously makes sense with this fight being 2 weeks away that there would be a lot of distractions in her life, and it would be in her best interest. So I kind of, you know, I don't applaud her for, you know, stepping away from the fight, but I don't knock her for doing so as well. Definitely that takes precedent when it's something in your personal life, and it seems as though that's something that needed to be taken care of. It's an unfortunate situation. They were kind of viewed now as the MMA power couple, and it's unfortunate because this appears to be Randy Couture's third divorce, and they did have a huge business in the Extreme Couture brand with the gyms and all that, but hopefully, you know, everything gets settled out and they're able to go on with their lives in the best way possible.
Yeah. And neither one of us is interested in going into whatever the reasons are, what's going on in their personal lives. But it is worth noting that in addition to being spouses, they're also business partners. And that is something that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out simply from an MMA business perspective. Because Kim is very involved in the business operations of the Extreme Couture Gym, where many of the best MMA fighters in the world train, and it will be something to keep an eye on in the MMA world to see what happens with that gym and whether how involved Kim stays, whether Randy, as he we assume is close to the end of his fighting career, whether he now takes a more active role in business management at Extreme Couture. That is all up in the air, and that I think is something to keep an eye on. I don't think either you or I are really the type to get into the details of of the unfortunate situation of the two of them and whatever the reasoning might be for their divorce. But the Extreme Couture gym is obviously one of the most respected gyms in the MMA community, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But from strictly a standpoint of the quality of the fight, what this really means is we're going to see a better fight on that Strikeforce Challengers card on Showtime, because you and I are in agreement that Sarah Kaufman is a more accomplished MMA fighter than Kim Couture is. Kim Couture was learning the sport, and she was learning it at a very high level because she was surrounded by the best MMA fighters in the world every day at her gym. But Sarah Kaufman is much more experienced, much more accomplished, and I really like this matchup. I think Sarah Kaufman against Miesha Tate is a very good women's fight, one of the top women's fights that we'll see this year, I think, and so I'm very excited about seeing that fight.
And it's good that Strikeforce didn't originally. I'd heard that Tate was going to be moved over to their June Challenger Series card. I'm happy that they found a replacement, and I'm happy they just didn't find, you know, some random replacement just to keep Tate on the card. Like I said last week, Strikeforce is the home for women's MMA. I'm glad that there is a home for women's MMA in North America, and they really should be getting stars like Kaufman and, you know, as I mentioned last week, Tara LaRosa, who to me, I still can't understand why she's not signed to Strikeforce. It's cool that they're able to get these fights and actually get people excited about them, because, again, back to boxing, that's another area where boxing wasn't able to capitalize, and it's not just, you know, it's not just people liking to like seeing, you know, two good-looking girls battle it out. These girls are respected. They fight hard, and more often than not, they produce the fight of the night. We saw that countless times with Elite XC, and it wasn't just with the Gina Carano fight. So I'm very excited that they're doing this. I think that there's definitely a place for female fighters on, you know, major MMA cards. But that said, I still, if we're going to get into this discussion briefly here, I still agree with Zuffa for not bringing in female fighters to either WEC or UFC, just because I don't think there's enough great ones out there in specific divisions. And I don't like the fact of just having, you know, random super fights here and there for Zuffa, because there is so much criticism being pointed towards Zuffa, and they're watched with such a careful eye that it's going to take people a long time to get used to seeing women fighting. And it's still taking the mainstream media and mainstream sports fans some time to get used to MMA fighting. So I don't think that it's worth it for them to open up this can of worms without so many great fighters. If there was, you know, 30 great fighters at 135 or 145 and they can make a legitimate division with a champion, then I'd say otherwise. But right now, I like the fact that we have a strike force that is building up these fighters with these kind of super fights, and then hopefully in a few years from now, Zuffa can maybe open its doors to female fighting.
Well, I personally would like to see Zuffa do it now, but you know, the bottom line is, if Zuffa isn't doing it, I'm glad Strikeforce is. I agree with you. I think it's surprising that Tara LaRosa is still kind of fighting in these small-time shows, and that she isn't on live TV anywhere, because I think most people I know do consider her the best pound-for-pound female fighter in the world today. It surprises me a little bit that she can't get more attention and that she hasn't signed on with one of the bigger organizations. But the bottom line is, there are some good women's fights. You know, I'm actually going to be in attendance at the upcoming Bellator show in Chicago in a couple weeks, and there's a women's fight on that card, and I'm looking forward to it. Carrie Vera, a lot of people know her as Brandon Vera's wife. She's an accomplished Muay Thai fighter. She's going to be doing, this is actually going to be her first professional MMA fight. She has professional Muay Thai fights on her record, but I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think that there are a lot of good female fighters, and I think that women's MMA is kind of on the upswing right now, and I think that's great for the sport. I'm looking forward to seeing that. You know, as long as we're talking about Bellator, I wanted to just ask you if you saw, Ariel, the incredible submission. Some people are calling it the best submission of the year, when Toby Imada used an inverse triangle to choke out Jorge Masvidal. Did you happen to see that one?
I did. And people are calling it submission of the year. That, in my opinion, is one of the five best submissions I've probably ever seen in my life. That was insane. I think you agree with me. I don't know about top five in your life, but I cannot believe it. And I think I watched it like 10 straight times after seeing it the first time.
Yeah, I do agree with you. You know, it's one of those things that, to me, I think there's a misconception among people who are not MMA fans, that those of us who love MMA want to see a knockout and want to see, you know, an elbow that opens up a huge cut on somebody's face, and we want to see lots of blood. To me, I love spectacular endings to fights, but I don't at all expect them to be knockouts. I love a spectacular submission just as much as a spectacular knockout, and I absolutely consider that one of the best I've ever seen. And it was a fighter. Toby Amato was losing the fight. He just pulled out this amazing submission that that few had ever seen before. I have read about it being done once in another fight. I had never actually seen it done in a fight before. But it's really a remarkable submission. It's one of the best ever. And I think that seeing great submissions like that is a big part of what makes MMA so exciting, just as much as seeing a spectacular knockout.
My favorite submission of all time is still Rio Chonan's flying scissor heel hook against Anderson Silva in 2004. That remains my all-time favorite. This one could give it a run for its money if I sit and digest it. But I think the bigger issue here and the bigger positive is what it did for Bellator, because all of a sudden, every MMA blog, every MMA website was talking about this, was posting their video. You had the Bellator logo there. And finally, it seems as though people noticed Bellator for the first time. Obviously, you know, they've had a few weeks now. They've had some good fights. Eddie Alvarez, everyone knows who he is. He's probably the biggest fighter in their stable. But to me, this was a turning point. I don't know if it was the turning point, but it was a turning point for Bellator to get them noticed and to get people excited, because now you have Imada now fighting Alvarez in the finals. Everyone's going to want to see that fight just because they want to see, you know, what can this guy pull out of his bag of tricks next. They want to see if Alvarez could win the title. And like you said, you know, they've got this little barnstorming thing, which personally I wasn't a really big fan of when I heard about it, just because I don't like just throwing out fights for the sake of throwing out fights, even if it's in a tournament. I can't really get up for something like that. But now that we're kind of in the midst of it, and it's kind of cool, like every week there are these new fights and it's a tournament and we're getting to see guys a few weeks later fight again, and they're going from town to town and they're really not just sticking to one geographical area in the United States. I mean, they're going all over the place. They're even venturing into Montreal, which I think is a brilliant decision just given, you know, the Canadians' love for MMA. So it's kind of cool, and apparently they're getting great ratings on ESPN Deportes, and the rumors are that they might even, you know, land on ESPN2 come next season. So, you know, all of a sudden Bellator was just sort of an afterthought. Come next year, they might actually be a huge player, perhaps even bigger than Strikeforce in the world of mixed martial arts. So it's a pretty amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, and you are so right. You know, Bellator did such a smart thing by putting that highlight on their official YouTube channel. You know, it's always, I actually also wrote something along these lines about the Kentucky Derby, but it's always this tightrope that sports leagues are walking where they're not sure how much should we allow to people to watch for free online, and how much should we force people to tune into our show to watch, or watch on our website, or watch on our TV partner, or whatever. I think Bellator did something very smart. I just checked. They're up over 50,000 views on their own official YouTube channel for that highlight of Toby Amata. There are also probably more than that, I think more than 50,000 views from other people who posted it themselves, and I'm sure those people have gotten cease and desist notices, and the Bellator is trying to take those ones down. But the bottom line is, this became a viral video, and that's the first time that has happened, that Bellator has people talking. You know, obviously the hardcore fans were aware of Bellator, and I think everybody has Eddie Alvarez in the top 10 lightweight. So, you know, certainly we know who Bellator is and we know who one of their fighters is, but we knew so little about Toby Amata before. And now all of a sudden people are like, wow, you know, Eddie Alvarez, a top 10 lightweight, is going to be taking on Toby Amada, who just gave us the MMA highlight of the year. All of a sudden, this is a really exciting fight. This is a fight that people care about. And Bellator was really smart to make that a viral video on YouTube, and it's really going to pay off for them. My guess is they will not be on ESPN2 in their next season. I don't think they're quite at that level yet. And what I mean by that mostly is that I don't think that the ESPN brass wants to do it yet, but they're getting in that direction, and highlights like this really have to help. And they've made me more interested in Bellator. Just seeing that, you know, you and I, obviously, we do this for a living. We were already aware of Bellator, but this is the type of thing that gets us really excited about it. And the fact that you and I are talking about Bellator is something that no one would have seen coming until that video hit the internet.
Are you as high on Bellator as I am right now? I mean, I must admit, like Friday afternoon, I wasn't that high on them, but this just kind of made me really excited about their whole concept and the fact that, you know, they're back next week with a new card and they're hitting all these, you know, MMA hotspots. Do you think that this model can actually work, you know, like 12 straight weeks tournament? I really don't think that it can work on tape delay. That's a whole other beast that I think they should rectify next season, because right now, with the internet and everything, people aren't going to want to stick around to watch something that's 24 hours old. But I'm curious your thoughts on whether or not a 12-week MMA tournament in a sort of sports season-like fashion can actually work, because it's something that, as MMA fans, we're really not used to, and as combat sports fans, we're really not used to. This is kind of a whole new beast. So we know that the UFC is trying to do something like this, a weekly series, but Bellator kind of crept up on us, and so far, it seems like so good.
You know, it's interesting you ask. I was actually attempting to sort of withhold judgment on Bellator until I saw them in person, because they are... I live in Chicago, and they're coming to Chicago in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to go see them in person. And I had actually sort of been thinking that I might not write anything about Bellator until I see them live, and then I might write here my first impressions. That Toby Amada took that out of my hands, and he did something that I simply couldn't help myself but to write about. I would say I am pretty high on them. I mean, when you have a relationship with ESPN, in the sports world, that's everything. I mean, if ESPN looks at Bellator as something that's going to make money for them, as something that's going to draw in fans, the ESPN marketing machine is a powerhouse in the sports world, and whatever they want to get behind, they see to it that sports fans know what this is. So, you know, if ESPN, I'm not totally convinced that they're going to, but if ESPN were to decide, you know what, we don't have much great programming on, you know, whatever it is, late nights, Fridays or something. You know what, we're going to start doing this Bellator thing Friday nights for 8 straight weeks or whatever it is. That would be huge. I mean, even if it's ESPN2 at midnight Eastern every Friday, that would just be huge for mixed martial arts to have ESPN behind it. And I think that's a possibility, and it makes Bellator a real player. You made the point that they could be bigger than Strikeforce. Right now, they're not close to Strikeforce, but if they get live fights on ESPN2, they are absolutely leapfrogging Strikeforce. And I agree with you, live is important. I don't like the idea of tape delay. I think that, you know, if you want to get kind of this online MMA community behind you, it just doesn't work to be sort of like, well, should we post spoilers and all that stuff? I think the fights have to be on live, and I think that's something they're going to rectify if they decide to go, if ESPN2 decides to televise Bellator. I think that they would decide to do it live. But I think there's promise. I think there's real promise, and there are talented fighters under contract to Bellator, and I'm going to be very curious to see at the end of this season what they do. One other thing, I think I'm higher on the tournament format than you are. It sounds like you're not real keen on having tournaments. I actually like the fact that they're doing it with tournaments.
I like tournaments. I just don't like the fact that we don't know who any of these people are. And now that they have this YouTube page that is getting a lot more eyeballs, I think that it would be a smart decision for them to put out videos in the days leading up to these tournament fights, getting to know these guys, because a lot of them are unknown to you and I, and, you know, with that said, very unknown to the casual fan. So to me, just having a tournament for the sake of a tournament is a little strange, and I don't know. You know, are they doing the tournament now just to crown champions, and then they'll have regular cards starting next year? There's a lot of questions to be asked about Bellator, but I think another interesting part about Bellator is also, you know, what happens if they do land on ESPN2, and then ESPN.com's MMA Live also lands on ESPN2, because that, in my opinion, would be a great, you know, companion programming for a Bellator event if they have, you know, like the way Friday Night Fights has their studio show, and then that leads into the fights. But then, you know, obviously the UFC wouldn't be so happy, because now ESPN is talking about a competitor. Will they, you know, will that strain the relationship between the UFC and ESPN? That's a really interesting story to look at, because obviously the UFC is the NFL. They are the big power. And now the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball is not on the number one sports channel. That's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it is fascinating. It'll be very interesting to see. You know, I'm looking forward to it. But I also agree with you that the Bellator, they have the one huge highlight, the Toby Yamada highlight, on their YouTube page. But you're right, they need to do more with it. In fact, I took a quick glance at their YouTube page, and I didn't see anything with Eddie Alvarez. Maybe I missed something. I didn't check every single video. But at least when you go directly to their main YouTube channel, you don't even see Eddie Alvarez, which is strange. You know, he's by far both their most talented and their best known fighter under contract. It struck me as very bizarre that they decided to launch this YouTube channel and they don't have right there at the top or near the top an Eddie Alvarez video. And when you look at some of their other videos, I mentioned more than 50,000 views for the Toby Yamada highlight. They've also got highlights. I see one right here on my computer right now as I'm talking to you with 81 views, and that's a video that's been up for 4 days. So obviously not all of their videos are getting viewed that often, and they could definitely stand to do a better job using YouTube to market themselves. But I like what they're doing. I like the direction that they're trying to go in. And I do like tournaments. I think that tournaments make for a very exciting format. There are obviously inherent risks with injuries and all those things, but I do like the tournament format. And I also wanted to ask you about another tournament. Did you watch the Sengoku, the featherweight Grand Prix and the other Sengoku fights that were on very, very early Saturday morning live from Japan on HDNet?
I watched them after the fact. I didn't stay up, and watch it live. I thought that this was perhaps the weakest Sengoku card, just because there was no major draw. The featherweight tournament is going pretty well for them, and there are some big names. And as you mentioned, you know, probably two of the top 10 featherweight fighters in the world are on the card or have been fighting in the tournament. So, you know, for the diehard fans, it's probably great. But I think that HGNet has to do a better job. Once again, we're talking about promoting fights and fighters. You can't just throw on these cards at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd love to see what kind of ratings this Sengoku card got. And even the last one. The last one just really had Muhammad Lawal on it. And that was, you know, interesting for us because he's a rising star. And I think a guy that will someday end up in the UFC. But they need to do a better job of promoting these fights. Something. I mean, I know they used to do like these 30-minute countdown shows for Strikeforce cards. They did one for Thompson Melendez last year. They also did one for a Dream card last year too. Nate Marquardt was actually the analyst on the show, which was kind of bizarre. But they need to do a better job, and I'm not just talking about Inside MMA, because something that they can replay throughout the week of getting people to know who these fighters are, because I don't know if they live in a bubble or something, but they're not doing a good job, in my opinion, of spreading the word about these cards. They just kind of appear at 4 a.m. And while it's great action, you know, when you're watching it, I don't know if anyone knows that it's actually happening. So that's my problem with it. But as far as cards go, it was great. Hioki obviously looks great. I think he'll probably win the tournament. But I like to look at MMA, especially from a mainstream perspective, and not just be so, you know, entrenched in it and sit in this bubble, but see, like, okay, what does this mean for the big picture, especially here in North America? And I think that HGNet is kind of dropping the ball with these Japanese cards.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, there are very few American fans who know who these guys are in the Sengoku cards. And yeah, you know, Mo LaWall looked like he was getting some momentum as far as creating a little bit of a buzz, although he hurt his knee. Not sure when we're going to see him again.
I was told but, August, by the way.
August is when we'll be seeing him again. Okay, well, that and that's not too far off.
But
you know, the question is, will Sengoku, you know, I seriously doubt many people woke up early in the morning to watch Sengoku or stayed up late at night, depending on your perspective. But you know, the card itself has some talent on it. It has, like you said, I think two of the top 10 featherweights. If they meet in the final of the tournament, I think that makes for a very exciting fight. But bottom line is, Sengoku, I think, is not a very big player in the MMA scene right now. The other Japanese promotion, Dream, is a pretty big player in the MMA scene, I guess. Do you have any thoughts on the latest news out of Dream? We had I posted something about Jose Canseco against Hongman Choi. It's a Japanese promotion, which means we don't know for sure that that's actually going to happen. But what do you think of what's going on with Dream and this big tournament that they're talking about?
If you take Jose Canseco out of the tournament, I actually like it a lot because there are some interesting names on it. It's kind of, obviously, it's a little freaky when you have like Hongman Choi and Sokoju in there. But, you know, a lot of the names are people that we've heard of. And other than the Canseco involvement, it's not laughable. But then when you throw in Canseco, it's just completely ridiculous. And I hope personally that it doesn't, you know, there's a difference between, you know, Kyle Maynard doing an amateur mixed martial arts bout in an unsanctioned state and people, you know, ripping on him for being a freak show. I obviously disagree with that, but that was the term that was used. And then Jose Canseco, who's become sort of this, I don't even know what to call him, larger-than-life mascot for Major League Baseball in terms of spreading the gospel word about steroid use in baseball. Now turning his attention to combat sports, first off, doing a 3-round boxing exhibition against Danny Bonaducci, which I actually watched live. I was with some people who worked on a documentary about Jose Canseco for A&E last year, and they wanted to see it. So I actually had the unfortunate pleasure of watching that fight, and it was absolutely ridiculous. And now him going into MMA is going to be even worse against a guy, Hongman Choi, who is, you know, definitely a freaky character, but a guy who knows how to win fights and is an accomplished K-1 fighter. I hate the idea of someone like Jose Canseco thinking that he could go into MMA and actually fight a credible opponent and thinking that just because MMA is just, you know, this loosey-goosey form of fighting where he can just go out there and swing for the fences, pardon the pun, and actually win a fight. And I think it tarnishes a little bit what Dream is trying to accomplish. But if you kind of step back and look at Dream's current situation and their poor ratings in Japan, maybe this is what they need. Jose Canseco is known worldwide, and especially Japan. They love their baseball. They definitely know who he is. Maybe this will get them the ratings, but this is a short-time fix and something that will not work. I've seen wrestling promotions try to bring someone like Dennis Rodman or Jay Leno in to get, you know, pop their buy rate, but at the end of the day, it leaves you with nothing. And Jose Canseco is not someone that you can build into a star. He's not someone that can eventually sell tickets for you. So what's the point? For one night to get a good rating, that rating's going to go down the next time you're out there. So to me, it's a very curious decision on Dream's part, and one that I hope ultimately falls through, because I think it'll just be a black eye on the sport of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, you know, and there's this concept of the freak show fight, as they call it, kind of has two separate elements to it. I mean, a freak show fight that involves someone who actually is committed to the sport to some extent, like, you know, a Bob Sapp or even a Butterbean. I mean, at least, or to maybe Kimbo Slice, you could say fits into that freak show mold. At least those people, you know, you feel like when you're watching them, you are watching people who fighting is what they do. But when you bring in a Jose Canseco, to me, that's like another order of magnitude from what really constitutes watching combat sports. I mean, Jose Canseco, he does something just totally different. It doesn't make any sense unless you're trying to turn your promotion into a joke, which I don't think Dream is doing. I don't think Dream wants to just kind of make people laugh at what they're watching. But then again, they had Bob Sapp fight a cartoon character in their New Year's Eve show. So maybe Dream likes the idea of fights that make people laugh while they're watching, and maybe there are some Japanese fans who will find it funny. I don't think there's anything funny about it. I think, you know, obviously I'm going to be watching. I mean, I'm not going to deny that I'll be tuning in if Jose Canseco does step into the ring with Hongman Choi, but it doesn't make any sense. It's not going to be a competitive fight at all. I mean, if Jose Canseco can't beat Danny Bonaducci in a boxing match, he certainly can't beat Hongman Choi in an MMA fight. So I don't understand why anyone thinks this is a fight that they should promote, except that Jose Canseco is a famous name, and he's a name that has us talking. And I guess that's what it's all about for a promotion like Dream. In any event, that I think we've run down everything that is happening in the world of MMA this week. It was a fairly quiet week in the sport, and combat sports was really dominated by Ricky Hatton and Manny Pacquiao, with Pacquiao having one of the most impressive showings of any fighter this year. But it's still been an interesting time, even a slow week in MMA. We can find plenty to talk about. And Ariel Helwani, it is always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, MDS. I look forward to next week, where we can hopefully talk about Mark McGuire's debut for Sengoku. That is the one I'm
Yes, maybe
for.
Even the Bash Brothers could even be a tag team.
Yes.
How about that?
I'm
with,
hoping
Tony
that he'll run in
as their manager
and save it. Yeah. Oh, that you took it to a whole other level there. That sounds like a great idea. So I'm hoping that he'll run in, save the day, hit Hongman Choi with a chair, and then they'll reunite once again, the Bash Brothers in mixed martial arts. I can't wait.
Sounds good, Ariel. We will talk about that and much more next week. Until then, see you later.